1991. We're here at Lane Place, the home of the Montgomery County Historical Society. This is one of a series of interviews that the Historical Society is making of veterans of World War II. As you all know, this is the 50th anniversary of the beginning of the World War II, and we're attempting to record the recollections of veterans of that war. Our plan is to give each interviewee a copy of the tape that he's making, and to place two copies of the tape in the Crawfordsville Public Library for future use. These tapes were according to the Montgomery County Historical Society is claiming ownership of the tapes and copyrights in them. This series of tapes is really inspired by that series last fall done on TV of the Civil War, when the veterans of the Battle of Gettysburg assembled on the 50th anniversary, and those old fellows with their beards and got together and discussed all of their actions back in the Civil War. So that's what we're doing here. And I'm going to start off by asking our subject here, give us your name and your date of birth.
James E. Bell, birth November 13th, 1906.
1906, well, you're one of the older ones.
Yes.
Where were you born?
Montgomery County, New Richmond.
New Richmond. And at the time, what was your background, your family background? Were they farmers, or what were they?
No, it was in the farmer dad in retail, but he was in the meat business all my life.
Up in New Richmond?
New Richmond, then down here, and he moved in.
All right. Where did you go to school?
Well, New Richmond until a sophomore, and then we moved down here, Crawfordsville, the day school started, 1923.
1923, so when you've been in?
Junior.
Junior in high school.
Junior and senior here.
All right, when did you get out of high school then?
What 25.
25, and what did you do after you went to, after you were through high school?
Worked.
Where'd you work?
Well, let's see, first I worked at the service laundry. I was driving a laundry truck, and then I went to work for Goodman's department store in 36.
That stood at the corner of, where was it? Green and Main Street.
Yeah.
And there was a dress shop there now, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Where the old store was. And how long did you stay with Goodman's right up to the time of the war?
Yeah, I stayed with Goodman's till the time of the war, and then I went back there before the war. Well, after the war started, I went back there for 2 or 3 years, and then...
Were you working somewhere else?
Yeah, at Rock Island Refinery, over there, 86th Street in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. How long did you work there?
2 years. I was there when the war broke out.
Okay. You went back to Goodman's then?
Went back to Goodman's. It wasn't long until I was there.
All right. Tell us, who's your boss over there at Goodman's?
Delacamp, Emerson Delacamp.
Emerson Delacamp. Now, somewhere along the line here, you got married.
Well, that was in 33. That was before I service on duty.
And who did you marry?
Marjorie Chadwick.
Chadwick. She was one of the New Richmond Chadwicks.
Yes.
And related to Brady Chadwick, who used to be the auditor when I first came to town.
That's right.
All right. Now, at the time that the war broke out, did you have any children?
Two.
And what were their ages?
Well, I see Sharon was about seven.
Nine.
And Dave Frank would be about seven.
And so they were kids in school already. Was Marge working then too?
Or she worked at the treasurer's office, didn't you? The auditor's office.
After a while.
And then while she worked there.
Yeah. All right. Now, you were pretty old when the war came along, and how did you happen to get called in the service with two children?
Well, I had a low number, for one thing. I was in the 900s per number. But I think the main thing was, I would have been exemplified with the state at the refinery because they were blending alcohol over there with methamphetamine.
Yeah.
And when I left over there, I went back to the department store, and they cut off all that of that.
Yeah. When did your number come up, or when were you called in? You were drafted, I take it.
Yeah, I was drafted, but I was called in March the 1st, 1944.
So that was real late in the war.
Well, the DBA hadn't been... Didn't have DBA.
All right. Now, tell us about your entry into service and where you went.
Well, first went to Fort Harrison, and I was only there 2 days and two nights, and we put me on a train, and I didn't know where it was going. We ended up at Camp Walters, Texas.
Camp Walters?
Camp Walters, Texas, at Mineral Hill.
That was an infantry...
IRTC camp.
Infantry Replacement Training Center.
Yeah. And it was a new camp, made out of the rocks and the hills and things out there.
Uh-huh.
There was nothing there but, rattlesnakes and everything.
Hot Estle? That's what they call the Estle.
Yeah.
You gave us that other name. It's really Estle Battle.
Yeah.
All right, Estle, you're pretty old for going through that basic training. How's your bear?
I had no trouble basic training. In fact, the younger guys are dropping out. I could work in the department store up and down three flights of stairs for 4 or 5 years, and my legs are good. We went into all of speed marching and everything else. I never dropped out.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Dr. Millis, the head of the nurse, he called me in once, and he said, you better drop out if you're going overseas.
Now, you met Dr. Millis along the line. Tell us about Dr. Millis, the people that probably won't realize who Dr. Millis is.
He was our family doctor and delivered both of our children.
And he was down there at Mineral Well.
He was the head of the medicine in Camp Walters.
And that was a welcome sight to see him.
I was on there 2 days and started to the line until I had a call to come to the infirmary, and it was Dr. Millis. He had read my name, saw my name on there.
That's
how we started taking our shots.
You'd be interested, Estelle, that when I was at Little Rock, Arkansas, Camp Robinson, I ran into Dr. Millis too. I had the measles and he was the doctor. after you got through basic, what do they want to do with you?
Well, we finished our 17 weeks of basic training at 11 o'clock on a Saturday. And that was in June. That was middle of the year. DD hadn't been only 2 days. And 1 o'clock they called out 58 names, mine was the first one out. They gave us a 10-day delay en route. Then we went to Fort Meade. And I stopped north of 10 days, and I was in Fort Meade, and everybody told me, because I was older, I would be sent back for cabby someplace.
Yeah.
Well, then I was at Fort Meade 2 days and one night, and went to Camp Shanks.
Where was that?
Well, New York wasn't very far,
uh-huh.
40 miles. We rode the train all night to go 40 miles. The line come down, that's what they did. When I got to Camp Shanks, well, my buddy then said, well, you'll go back from here. So that...
And your buddy, who was that?
Well, Roy Carter from Scottsburg was my name.
He was a fellow that you'd known?
Yeah, well, we met him there, and he knew Red Howe. He's a good friend of Red Howe's from Scottsburg. So then we really got acquainted with him. And this was, we got into Camp Shanks early that morning after running all night. I was there all day. My name was on put on KP at 4 o'clock in the evening. And before I got there, it was taken off. And they called us all in. They issued us ODs. We knew where we was going then. They called us out of the hands away from.
Uh-huh.
So then one of the officers said, well, when you get told, you're gone. So that was, we was there that night. And then the next night, we was put on the train. We rode all night. They told us that we'd be down in Virginia and everything. And we got on the Aquitania boat the next day.
Aquitania?
Uh-huh.
That was one of those old pleasure ships.
10,000 of us on there.
Uh-huh. And you shipped out?
Shipped out. And I was one of the lucky ones on there. I got to be a gunner on the starboard side, on the 3-inch gun. Got to be on the top deck all the time.
Uh-huh. You didn't go down there and sleep with the hammocks.
Well, we had the hammocks on the top, but had the bottom one on that, and then it's two above me.
All right, did you, went over to Carboy, did you?
No, because this boat was still faster than this.
All right. Where did you land?
Scotland, Glasgow.
And what happened then?
Well, they put us right on a train and went up to England to a camp they called Broomstock, up close to Southampton. And it was there about, we went there over a week, took it down to Southampton, put us on the boats and over we went.
Were on the LSTs or LSMs or what were they? Landing craft.
Yeah, and even that late after D-Day, when I went in, they waited water with it.
What day was that? Do you remember what day you went?
No, I don't. But according to my book, it must have been early in August or late July.
Were the Germans still shooting at them as they came in?
Germans did not shoot at us, and the Hungarians were over, but they were so high that they...
They didn't shoot at body?
No, they did not when we went in. They bothered us at night.
All right. What outfit were you with?
I was with the 29th Division, 175th Division, and 175th, and I come.
175th. Regiment.
Yeah.
Of,
I come.
Of the 29th
Division. 29th Division.
And what was your job?
Rifle shooter. They told me when I got up there that anything you wouldn't run me shoot. That's what I put the rifle in. That possible.
You were using M1s by that time,
didn't you? Oh, yeah. That's a good rifle.
And tell us about your progress and what happened after that.
Well, after so long, we went up there. We went through St. Louis, still the rebels, and then I think Barry, well, I know Barry was another battle, but it had been taken. We bypassed it, and then we started in. I remember, we took us up the front line, so we... Before we could hear the rifle fire, kept us overnight, and next morning at 4 o'clock, orders come and said, you're going to see things that you've never seen or dreamed of, and you're going to the front. And we did, and brought the dead soldiers all the way up there. We wasn't very far back, and we had to step over. Well,
dead soldiers?
Germans or Americans? They hadn't got to them yet, see, the battle was big. We went up there, and they had...
Oh, where was this?
Well, that was in France, in the Hedgerow fighting. At Berry on the south. And we had thought of there for several days, I can't remember just how long, at Hedgerow fighting. That was the scariest part of the whole war.
And when you speak of Hedgerow, what do you...
Well, see, in France, and you read the Hedgerows, they had them built up, Hedgerows, just like, well, like you'd build a dam, I mean, a thing up here, and an hedge over it. See, they're around every field in that way. You may only go part of here at the city building to the next one. And if you're reading that book, tanks couldn't even bust them open. And you'd have to then just stand there and shoot. And so the thing, then you went over and you run. If you was one of the lucky ones, you didn't get hit, something like that. And then they got back, and then it got so good that... Well, we jumped hedgerows, we called it jump hedgerows, for 2 or 3 days, and then they retreated pretty fast. And I remember after we came out of that, we didn't know where we was going until they took us down and we walked through Rennes, France.
How do you spell that?
R-E-N-N-E-S.
R-E-N-N-E-S.
And the people there just cheered and threw flowers to us and everything. But we walked down and got on the train. And then we headed in the train down to Brest.
To Brest?
Yes, way to the south.
On the sea coast?
And it's clear down to the bottom of France, yes.
All right.
And that was a famous, that was a strong submarine defense for France, too. Yeah. And they had taken that.
Tell us about what time this was.
This was in, must have been in late July.
And you'd already gone through all this hedgerow thing.
Well, yeah, we had, it must have been August. It's got the date right in there, but I have to turn this was out of the hedgerow fighting in we was, but...
Did you lose many of your buddies in the hedgerow?
Yeah, and that's where you lost most of, in hedgerow fighting.
Fellows that you come past to?
Well, no, not... there were several you posted, but you didn't have time when you was up there, but be attached to many of them, you just...
You were probably a replacement then, if you...
Yeah, I mean, we was one of the first replacements there. They told us we was one of the first replacements after the Battle of St. Louis. And we went down to Brest, and I remember we was oriented, Battle of Brest, it said it'd probably take us a week, and we get out 8,000 prisoners, well, it took us about a month. And they had to bring in the 8th Division and some more to help us, and we got, when we got through, we got around 60,000 prisoners.
60,000?
See, they had that big fort down there, and they, when we got there, that big fort and an underground fort that went to have an elevator down to it. That tells most about it, it was, well, the most of the fighting, after we got in Brest, was snipers shooting from the forts. We cleaned out the troops, really, and...
Cleaned out the snipers, you mean?
Well, eventually, but first, most of it, but this was, let's see, on 2 days, we couldn't move. We got into, had to Brest, we couldn't move, just fire all the time. Eisenhower backed us all out and sent, if you remember, 5,000 planes over 2 days in a row. And they just dropped bombs constantly, the big bombs with the big bombers, and they just knocked the city down, and then we went in. But they didn't, those bombs didn't knock that fort out. We, most of the forts we had to knock out, we done with flamethrowers. The first.
The flamethrowers.
Yeah, and when we went through that...
But the infantry had to follow the flamethrowers.
Oh, yeah. And, they were flamethrowers with tanks. That's the way we went through the Maginot Line, flamethrowers.
All right. Now, did you see them? Did you come face to face with a lot of these prisoners?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I did. In fact, I helped take some of them back.
What was their feeling? Were they resigned or giving up? Or?
The young ones, the SS troopers, you couldn't even trust them when you take them back. The older ones was kind of glad to get out. They'd been, most of them had been up, a lot of them had been up in Russia and different places. But these young SS troopers, you couldn't trust them. You couldn't even blink your eyes and trust them. I know, even right in front of me. But then after we got out, well, it was a moment, a long time after that, then they got ready to get up. But a lot of these prisoners, we'd take them back and put them in trucks. We'd just toss them up in the trucks, and the officers would say, would keep telling us, you're crazy, if you're fighting us, you ought to be on our side fighting the Russian. That's what they would tell us. Sometimes I wonder if they were right. That's right, they did.
you did, what about the language barrier? You're talking, were they talking English or they were you talking German?
They talked English, all of them did.
The officer.
Yeah, and when we went through Holland, all of them, people there talked English, knows we did.
All right, now, the Battle of Brest, you took 60,000 prisoners.
That's what they told us, about 60,000. I didn't see all of them, but I believe them.
How did they manage all those people?
I don't know.
How did they feed them?
Well, they took them back. They supposed to have given rations, K-rations.
Now, did you see the, did you get in there to the fort at Brest?
No, I went inside, none of us. Well, maybe the 116th, I think some of them got in after it was taken. No, I saw it from the outside. I could see them shooting at it. But it had shells on the paper.
Now, the Brest is a seaport.
Yeah.
Could you see out over there and see the ships?
Well, after we got into the city and got through on our, the side we was, we could see up there.
Were there battleships and that sort of thing?
Well, there wasn't too much out there because of the submarines. I think they moved it.
A submarine base, was it?
Yeah, that was a submarine base.
All right, anything more about Brest, do you know?
No, after that was over, they put us on a train and took us back up through Paris and up to Leichtfeld.
Well, how do you spell that?
L-I-E-G-E.
Oh.
We've been on a train from there up to Paris. In the Leipzig, Belgium, and then branched out from there, and we was the north flank of the first battle in Germany, Hocken. And that was up. But we didn't go in the city. I mean, we're just a holding position.
But did you have combat there?
Yeah, we had some combat. Ours wasn't tough at one time, they could see, they wouldn't move him up. That was the first battle in Germany. And then we, our outfit, 29 swung north all the time. I mean, there we kept it going north.
North of the main.
Yeah, of Germany. We ended up our, yeah, we went on up through there. We was up, out of town, you see there, we jumped, everything was all their open. It wasn't all their open. It wasn't a big one, but that's where we got a charge. We took a big mine and they had a charge. We finally got a shower there. And we stayed there a day or two.
Showers, you mean?
Yeah, the mine had charge. It pulled your stuff up on a chain.
Oh.
Hundreds of them. And they let us all get a shower there before we went on.
What was, why would they have showers in the mine? What was that about?
Well, I suppose all mines have showers in them.
Oh.
Here too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and happened there. And then we was, for a day after that, we kind of slowed up and, I remember a couple, they sent us, let us go back up there one time, take shower.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in.
I take it from that, up to that point, you hadn't had much chance to wash up.
Well, after breath, they let us go out there in the sea and that was salt water, no soap. We just rinsed off. Out in the sea, just openly. No.
But your clothes get ready so they stand up.
Well, they kept the new clothes and dry socks constantly.
They did.
On the front line. We didn't have to have our clothes on.
Yeah.
They weren't smooth.
Now, was it getting pretty cold as you got up there?
Not real cold. It wasn't, even on Christmas Day, it wasn't real cold. It was just like fall, frozen out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't that cold. Really, if I remember right, in January, it got pretty cold. But I never remember anything like zero or anything like that.
Didn't have any trouble with frozen feet or anything?
No, exactly. They kept us.
Okay.
Dry socks all the time.
Uh-huh.
They throw us out a dozen pairs sometimes to each person.
Uh-huh.
See, it got so, after you're fighting those head drills and things, you didn't carry a pack. All we carried was a raincoat and dry socks and things.
Uh-huh.
And loot that we can pick up. Carried all the loot.
The what?
Loot.
What kind of loot were you?
Well, after we got in Germany, every time we went through all the jewelry stores.
You did?
Then the next thing you throw it out and pick up something there, you didn't know what was good and what wasn't.
Well, what did you do with all that stuff?
Well, when I got hit, it was supposed to fall on him and everything was gone. Nothing cut up, caught up with me.
Oh.
So in the evacuation hospital, I expect that's where.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good stuff. I had a German Luger.
Now, you were on the northern flank in Germany. Did you go through any more fighting after that?
Well, yeah, we fought all the way. See, we were going to cross the Ruhr River, Jülich, which we did.
That's where?
Jülich.
Jülich.
Yeah, that was one of the.
How do you spell that? J-U-L-I-C-H,
I think.
I-C-H.
That was one of the, and then that was one of the hard, well, we had fought coming through Holland, this one up there. Meisterich Holland was one of the hardest. We have a cemetery there, 29th Division, that's a cemetery, Meisterich Holland. And that was one of the toughest ones. They were all dug in trenches, they had trenches there. We would run them out in the day and they'd run us out at night.
Mm-hmm.
11 days, 11 nights before we got them out there, before we got to a little town of 400.
Out of the trenches?
Yeah.
You'd run them out of the trenches?
In the daytime, they'd retreat. That early morning, they'd retreat. And then at night, here they come. And we had to retreat. We didn't know how to do. And I remember the saying was there every night. Every time we'd get there, and every time we'd go around, we'd say, I wonder what Gabriel Heater said in the night.
Gabriel Heater?
Yeah, he was one of the, now, the news commentators.
Yeah.
And we'd all say, I wonder what Gabriel Heater said in the night. They'd run us back two or three. Road. And then finally we got to the town of Borheim, and that was a tough one. Borheim was so close to the Ruhr River, we could see it.
Mm-hmm.
We could see the Ruhr River and see Jülich from there almost. And we were there for several days, and that was a tough battle because that was their last stronghold.
Borheim.
That was their last stronghold across the river. They retreated every place there. So they come with tanks and everything else. Just kept it coming. I got a Bronze Star there. That's where I got my Bronze Star.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we had to go get the artillery, but had zeroed in on the tanks. They was annihilated. We got to Borheim. We left with a full platoon, and when we got there, we had 11.
A full platoon was how many people?
Well, it's 37, 36, 37, I think, Leo. We had 11 men left in ours.
Were there most of them killed?
Well, could be. I don't know how many, but my friend Carter told you about that before he got there. Mm-hmm. Right outside of that, coming in there.
Yeah. Now, you spoke about the Germans threw everything at you. But you came at them and drove them off, is that right?
They had the tanks, those 88s, they fired one man. And in Borheim, we had to bring the artillery. They got in the town, and we didn't have our bazookas, nothing like that, when they come out, those big Tiger tank. They brought the 105, the artillery, right in on the streets of Borheim, and knocked the tanks out.
You mean the Americans brought it?
Brought the artillery, brought their 105s and 155 right in there and fired point blank out, not a minute.
Mm-hmm.
See, our first tanks for a long time over there wasn't big enough, and they had a 75 on their tanks, and that didn't bother
75 millimeter gun?
Yeah, millimeter. So finally they brought the big General Pershing tanks over there with 90 millimeter guns, and the Tiger tanks had to run then.
Mm-hmm.
They could knock the Tiger tanks out.
Yeah.
And finally, after Borheim, we moved right up on the river, right across the river. Rural River. Waiting to cross it, see. And we was there just before Christmas, and Christmas. Yeah, I guess it was there Christmas. And they was playing records, White Christmas, Bing Crosby, and all of them across the river from us, so we could hear. And tell us we back about Potter Wise and everybody was doing back home, you know, you better say. Oh, you should have. I mean, of course, that was part of their propaganda. But they played those records of everybody, Bing Crosby and everybody's day and night particularly, keep away. And now the snow will come on then. There was snow there, that's right. Because we had to watch them. They was running patrols across with white. I'm trying to get around behind them. Behind us with these patrols. And we, because at that place we was thinned out, and we had a telephone or communication meet fossil. We was about, we still were away to the parks. And we keep, those patrols come over and we kiss them and we get rid of them.
You'd have to get rid of them.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we had to teach them and take that and get behind us.
Mm-hmm. Now, communications, what kind of communications?
Well, it's just like a telephone. They strung a wire through there and so it was, and mm-hmm. so forth down there and so forth.
Between the potholes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Always there. See, but it was there a long time. We had went way back in this picture in there, or train crossing.
Mm-hmm.
Way back in France, someplace there. Training for 2 or 3 days. And just about the time we were supposed to jump to get Huey, they opened the dams up above it. You couldn't pop because it tells you never how many million tons of water came down for days.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to postpone that for, I don't know.
They had to postpone
that for almost 2 weeks before we could go across.
Before the water finally drained off and then?
Well, it got low enough that we went across. See, they put these, they had these small landing crescent. The first wave was going across in those. And when we got across there, I went across the one of them. And I tell you, there's someone went across, started across these single boats, but they didn't make it. Well, we got across the other side, and taking that bank, our engineers pulled the bridge up. They had made one of these swinging bridges.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they had done that, and we we hadn't any more money the other side, they pulled that up. Now, a bunch of them went across, a lot of people went across.
What are they called, those bailing bridges or what are they?
I forget what, it's in there, it's a suspension bridge.
Yeah.
But they wasn't, they didn't last too long, they hit it and busted.
And the Germans hit the bridge?
Yeah, knocked it out after, a lot of them got across first, but they got another one up right quick. And we fought in Jewett there for, well, see, we was a big division. We had 115, 116, 175, and we were a 18,000 division, so we scattered. No, we didn't run too long, did we? Then after Jewett, I set my console at Jewett, at least, when the planes come over and knock Cologne down. They were letting, they were using a new bomb, an aerial bomb, they called, they let it loose right over us. It was only 18, 20 miles to Cologne, from where we were. And we thought that's where we'd go, and we went out, and we went so far, and they swung north, and we went north to Mönchengladbach and right.
Where?
Mönchengladbach and right, R-E-H-Y-T or something like that. Two big cities, Gebel's home, which is. We didn't do too much fighting all the way up there. In fact, after we cleared out Jewett, the actual combat was kept sparse. Now we went from there on after we cleaned up. That was, the funny thing about that, as mentioned about, they took Gebel's room, and someone found a big warehouse, the five-star Hennessy Cognac. And it was full. And everybody, their packs were nothing but cognac. And Charlie, we call him Volunteer Charlie, or General Gerhardt. And that night, we got in there in the morning, that night, boy, working down the line, everybody could keep two bottles, get rid of them. Next morning, he come over there, an 8-man patrol could took the whole 29th Division that night. To celebrate. Bicycles and that thing, it was full of bicycles, everybody was drinking cognac and riding bicycles. All over the place. Pretty big city. And went into Gebel's home, and he'll tell you, and there, the beds, everybody got in their bed with their shoes, bloody shoes and things. They still had a lot of furniture in there. So then we...
You didn't get Gebel's, though.
Yeah. Plus, he was there, the head of the Air Force there. You know, he was a general Air Force. And
we were thinking of Garrett was head of the Air
Force. Well, then Gebel was...
He was a propaganda minister.
Well, it was his home.
Gebel?
Or no, Gebel.
Gebel. Okay.
And then we went from there out. Well, we was relieved there by the 75th Division, or 1 Division went through us for a few days. So then it wasn't but a few days we stayed there, and then we went for the Rhine. And they call it a horseshoe, you know, where it's way up north. And we crossed the Rhine on a horseshoe, but we didn't have any trouble when they shooting on that. And then across the Rhine, we went, I was in Dusseldorf. And
Dusseldorf?
Dusseldorf.
Yeah.
And Essen, we went through Essen, a big port went there. Then we went on north up to Munster. And Munster had been knocked down and everything, except they had some big hospitals. They never touched a hospital up there.
Now, Esther, you're talking about doing all this moving. Was this on foot or you were riding on the...
95% of it was on toilet. Yeah. Well, if you went too far, they would take those trucks and they'd take you up so far. But no, we don't just walk across France, except down to Brest, all through there. And all through Holland, we'd walk, see you fight for a day or two, move up further. And you got to clean these towns out. These small towns, you're going to clean these towns out and dig in, maybe next month, day at night, you get another one next year. We always knew where we was going the next day. Because at night, they shell and set them on fire. We could see the fires. And we knew what town was over there, which one we knew was going on there. Then we take it the next day and we dig in and then we didn't know. We just kept moving like that for days. The biggest train rides we had was down to Brest and then back up to Rheinfelden. That was about the only time I was on a train.
You did do a few times you rode on a truck though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, when was the war about over?
We hadn't had to do too much fighting, you just get spots that somebody got. And in Munster, when we got to Munster, and we was there for, I don't remember just how long, it was there for 2 or 3 days and then. And we headed north and east, a city of Warndorf, I'd say, but size of Lebanon or bigger.
Warndorf.
Hadn't been hit by shell, he even had electricity yet. And that was at night, get out of there, and we confiscated weapons from the Germans. And the Russians, the treaty Russians, and they were fighting a little. And then we was holed up in the rooms of the house and all this, because it was pretty nice. And we went back to Backyard, and we had a young kid from Nashville, Tennessee. He was only 18, gun replacement. He had a Burt gun.
Burt
gun. He shoot out 30 rounds.
Automatic gun.
Yeah, he shoot out 30 rounds before you knew it. And he was cooling with it, and I was sitting there, and the other guy's there, and he's cooling up here, and we told him to, he didn't know how to do it, told him, one of the guys said, leave him alone. We'll unload it for him. About that time, he ripped off. He just missed my ankle, and got one of the boys in the leg, and another boy scratched him pretty bad.
Put you out of commission.
Put me out of commission, and picked me up and carried me to the first aid station out there, the two of us, go there. Put it in the truck and went back to the evacuation hospital. 75 miles back. We got back there.
Oh, a truck?
Yeah. We got back there 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock something. No, 4 o'clock. And we got in there and they said Roosevelt had died. Just died. So then I got to get the Roosevelt died.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got back there and they kept me there for 3 days a night and then put me back to Birmingham in the hospital. And I was there for, I don't know, 2 or 3 or 4 weeks and we come back on time going. But I heard afterwards that in this evacuation hospital that Dr. Wallace was there and this
gentleman, Dr. Wallace
from Crowdersville, and Jamie Hubbard, a nurse.
Yeah.
I heard she was
we've done her brother on this series here.
Oh, John?
Was it Jack?
Yeah.
Jack.
Yeah. Well, we and I didn't know, but we had heard that Dr. Wallace there, and that Jane Hubbard was a nurse there from Crawfordsville.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that.
Did you meet any other fellows from your hometown on your course of your travels?
No, I tried to, Dr. Cook's son was in the 2nd Armored Division. See, we were the 29th, 2nd Armored, and the 30th,
mm-hmm.
in all these spearheads. And I had learned that, and we were stopped for a day or two, and I went over to the 2nd Armored Division and looked for him. Everybody told me that they knew some of
Tom Crooksy.
Yeah, they knew him, and I got back, and somebody said, somebody here from your hometown looking for him. And I thought, he was over there with me, yeah. So we missed him.
His dad, Doc Crooksy, was Mayor Crawfordsville.
Yeah.
All right. Now tell us, you mentioned your commanding general. What did you say his name was?
Well, it's Charles Gerhardt, and we call him, we have spoken with Volunteer Charlie, because we said we had to spearhead every attack.
Uh-huh.
And every time they wanted, somebody got stolen, they had to go. We felt like we had to go. Yeah, that was his name, went around to Volunteer Charlie.
Now what kind of, did you ever meet the guy?
I saw him close. But
uh-huh.
One thing, when we was up there with this Rogue River up in there, General Eisenhower came up.
Did you see him?
Yes, I saw him, and I was in the front line right here, and he walked right through, and he spoke to every one of us.
Uh-huh.
We were lined up, not for inspection, and I could have reached out and touched him.
Uh-huh.
He was up there, of course, it wasn't much rifle fire then, but he was close enough to get hurt.
Yeah. What did you think about the officers and the fellows you served with?
Well, the ones I had was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any of those hardened nose from, like I said, General Patton. Of course, you don't get that here when you don't get that command from them direct. It comes down from somebody.
Yeah.
But our lieutenants and captains were, our lieutenants was great. They were leaders, you know, for a platoon or something.
Well, they weren't scared to get up there.
We lost 2 good ones going out first.
Uh-huh.
And we lost, I probably could have been a buck sergeant, squad leader, and I didn't want it. No way. Every time we took that tank, the squad leader was hit first. We lost a tank we went in. We lost a squad leader and had a new one.
Uh-huh. us about the losses of your division. How many men were in the division, how many dead were there?
Well, there's supposed to be around 16,000 out of the 29th, the old thing. That cemetery over there, that carnage buried over there. That cemetery, they say, is about 16,000, 29th Division.
29th Division had 16,000
in a cemetery.
Graves in a cemetery in...
That's what they say.
In France?
Yeah, well, in Holland.
Holland.
Right, around Maastricht, Holland.
Holland.
It wasn't too many years ago, they had all the... They invited the parents and the family of all those guys that they remember from them, and they were guests of the Dutch people, and Carter's family went over.
Carter, now that was your friend from Scottsburg. All right. Now, Estill, did you have any close calls like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about it.
I think the closest call was we going up to an intersection there, the Ottoman Road, the main thing was supposed to take me, and up over a hill, raised, to get there, turnip patch. Well, we crawled in the turnip patches.
Turnip patches?
Yeah. Germany was full of turnip patches. And just as we was getting up there, they just mortar shells just coming in right and left. And one lit out in front of me, but I'm not too far in front of me. It almost knocked me down. I got concussion. The one man over here and the man over here got the shrapnel. The man on this side got torn to pieces, tore his legs to pieces. Didn't kill him. But I didn't get a scratch there, only concussion. And then it was just another time. Well, Borheim, where we dug in out there, there was a bale of hay.
Mm-hmm.
And we all put bale hay over the top in front of our fossil. And Lottis and I had a mortar shell hit right on the bale hay, but it didn't come through that.
The bale hay was stopped?
It stopped those mortar shells. A lot of them had it. If we hadn't had that bale hay, it would have been a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, that was in the heart. They didn't have their hay all up in straw stacks, and as it going through there, we snipers, yeah, we had to be straw stacks out there and things. Well, we not completely bigger, but the snipers. So some of us had to carry tracer bullets.
Tracers.
Yeah, and we had to shoot them in those straw stacks and set them on fire. We got the snipers done.
Mm-hmm. What you do, you see a straw stack, you know that'd be a sniper, right?
Well, if they're shooting at us, we knew that there's in some, but we'd set them all on fire with tracer bullets.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody liked using tracer bullets because, boy, it was tough to clean your rifle afterwards.
Uh-huh.
But I learned, and you get learned some of that in basic training, I learned to clean my rifle at night. I take my rifle apart in the dark and clean it, keep it working.
Mm-hmm.
That M1 is the best one. They never had a better one.
Yeah.
You can zero that in and you can knock a fly off of a boat.
Mm-hmm. Any other close calls that you remember? Had any happen there in Brest?
Well, Brest, yeah, we were all ducking and hitting the streets from snipers and things from this, don't you? I mean, it's just one of those, somebody was getting it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You just remember. Everybody's in the wrong place at the right time, you know. I think if he hadn't brought those 10,000 planes in those 2 days, we never would have got it in there.
Mm-hmm.
Preston, then, there's a lot of times that you shell that lines around you, and your rifle shell just go right over your head and crack.
Yeah. Were you wearing your helmet all the time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I think my helmet had a couple dents in it from shrapnels.
Uh-huh. Now, did you make some close friends over there in your service?
Well, we weren't in there time enough to make friends when we after got hit. I met some people. And coming back on the boat, we were litter bait, and they made us two there and two on this side. One of the prophetic, he was a church about the Acadian, and he brought me up to be a real good man.
You ever hear of any of those fellows since you've been out of the service?
Oh, for a good long time I did, and what was his name? I started at Shep or something like that. Yeah, I heard some. Man, I suppose they're gone or forget it just like we did. I sent them Christmas cards they sent to me, man, it's all 46 years that both of us gone, I think.
Yeah. Do you have any reunions? Is your outfit have any reunions?
Every Labor Day weekend, two or three days. They're all in Pennsylvania or around there, Maryland, see.
Ever been to any of those reunions?
No, I should have gone. I, you know, the 29th Division is a Maryland division. It's called that. We've talked about it a few times, we never did do it. It's every Labor Day, you know.
Yeah. Now, after you got home from the service, what did you do?
Well,
tell us about how you got out. I suppose you had to be hospitalized.
Yeah, they brought us back and put us on train at New York. I went through southern Indiana and trained and stopped to Jackson, Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And the hospital down there was a bone hospital. Beautiful, big hospital. And they kept me there for 3 months. And telling me, see, I don't have my heel bone. If you see my other shoes, they're all run over just goes like that.
Uh-huh.
Which they told me I was the luckiest man in the world, but didn't mean an inch higher.
You mean that from that gun firing?
That gun firing shot the heel bone off.
Uh-huh.
So I had to stay down there. They decided whether the scar tissue was going over and we were going to put a plate in there. Mm-hmm. So then finally they sent me down. Well, I got to come home for 10 days from there, didn't they? Yeah. I got to come home 10 days in there. So I got a furlough to come home to find my crutches, see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you try to carry a big bag and with crutches. So we got up to the railroad station where it was, and of course they had a sonar thing there. So I went up to one of the ladies there and I said, I'd like to trade these crutches for a cane until I get back. I said, I can't handle this. And she laughed. So they took my number and put my name on and everything else and give me a nice cane and I can back with a cane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I stayed, went back there, I went in to trade my crutches was gone. And she said, well, they picked your crutches up. Picked all you guys' crutches up. So I went back out there and went to my bed, and I didn't even get to where my bed was. And boy, I had to go into the doctors, and they went through that straight there. I was going to be in Fortify, but I hadn't any damage to it. So they kept me there 3 months and then sent me back to Atterbury. Well, I went back to Atterbury. All I had to do was play volleyball every morning.
Mm-hmm.
2 or 3 hours to work that
strength.
Yeah, strength. And I was there just 3 months.
When did you get out finally?
November the 9th. November the 9th of 45.
And then did you go back to Goodman's?
Yeah.
Or, and then after that you you started your own store, as I recall.
Well, I've been back there 5 or 6 years, and then we bought the Batala.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And
we had that 14 years and sold it to the chain outfit out
of. Yeah. And for a while you were county clerk.
Yeah, I went back to Goodman's for 2 or 3 years, and then I county clerk.
You were county clerk for
2 terms.
All right.
And end up the Chamber of Commerce 10 years.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. That came after the county clerk.
Yeah, well, I was the county clerk. I had a year and a half to go yet.
And took the job as...
Yeah, they didn't really want me to take it because I knew people and I took it.
Yeah.
Didn't do too much, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Just 10 years to the day I was there.
Uh-huh.
Retired.
Now, you're, all the while you were, had a wife back home, I suppose, was worrying about your planning. Was there much correspondence going on?
Well, we could write when we get a chance. She would. I think the time that I was in the hospital, she didn't hear for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks.
You were moving on the move all the time. Was the mail, did mail catch up with you?
Yeah, I think it did pretty much. And she'd send cookies and stuff and they'd catch up with me. Sometimes I'd get one of them. Before the other guys
got. I think that what I want to do now, let's take a look at your book there, see if you've got any maps or anything.
Yeah, there's maps.
Oh, I wanted to ask you, You got the Brown Star, what was that for?
Well, it was at the City of Boroughline in there, it's in there.
Yeah.
And that's when the tanks was coming in and shells, and we were getting artillery support.
Mm-hmm.
They were going on it. Well, it was an opening, like a commons, they called them that. The artillery advisors were down there probably two or three blocks at least, maybe three blocks. And all communications had been knocked out, see, from us, from our place. So our lieutenant sent a man down. He said, we got to get the artillery to stop those tanks. See, they were coming across the river, they were coming in. And he got killed. See, they could shoot close enough to shoot rifle fire through there. So he said, I need a volunteer to get to there. Well, I was there. I thought they'd call any man. I said, I'll go. And I took off, and they didn't have me. And I got there to the artillery, to the officers, and they said, so they went up to the second floor of the big building, and he gave the, told them what he has and everything. And boy, how long that artillery come in, and those things went back. It just knocked them out. They was to see the big stuff in them.
So you volunteered to go in there and...
I tried to cross that common, that's how they get you. I volunteered, yes.
And you crossed the common and got into the building and got up where the artillery spotters could...
Yeah.
Could,
I thought it was going anyway, so I better drop that.
All right. Have you got a map in here that'll show some of this?
Well, see, this is down to Brest.
Yeah, well, now we're going to have to show this, we're going to have to...
Oh, and see, every place we was, there's Julie.
Yeah.
See, it each individual map for each battle.
Yeah.
In there.
All right, now let's look at... let's look at Brest here.
I see, now there's Brest. It shows where we...
Where is... this is the city down here?
This is the city down here. See, this... these marks is where our lines of the troops were.
Mm-hmm.
See, this up in here.
Yeah.
And it touches 116, 175, 115, and all that.
Where was your division? Where was your regiment?
Well, we were right outside here. It's on... mm-hmm. And one of theirs, 175th. Stayed outside there for a long time until we knocked it down.
All right, now we've got another map over here. What's this?
Let's see.
The western...
well, this is Cologne. Now, this is Julie here. This is where we're sitting here, see?
Mm-hmm.
And I think... now, see, there's my building back there. Ockham. That is a tough battle. And this is Julie's where we... this Gellerkirchen. And I want to... tell you something about Gellerkirchen. We were in that city. It's a pretty good sized city, not a big one. Big white main street. Half of it was in Holland, middle class people was in Holland, between Holland and Germany. This half was Germany and south of Holland.
And were you fighting at that time?
Well, we got fought up too there, and we bivouacked, or stayed out there in a field outside of that. And here come American planes, two American planes, and they start strafing us out there. And then we found that they shot them down, and found out later that the Germans had captured two American planes and rebuilt them. And that's where the strafing is.
Oh, we done it.
Now, see, we can go to, we cross Julie, and then here we go up to, now that is, or, see, the Rhine, where we crossed. Well, we crossed Julie.
This is the Rhine right here.
Yeah, okay, but the Ruhr is right in here, where we crossed it. And then we went up to here. Now this is a horseshoe. I don't know where the horseshoe is. One of these places they call it a horseshoe because I remember we come right up across the Rhine right down to Düsseldorf.
Mm-hmm.
Central Blend.
Yeah.
We got up this way, we went north.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other, there's a map for every battle that was in. Attacked on. I don't remember that town.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at this. I don't remember that town.
Well,
we were the first army of occupation. After the... now, there's that Boroughline I told you about, see.
All right. And where were you coming in? From over here?
Yeah, see, this shows we come into Boroughline and the Ruhr River, see. Then we had to cross that Ruhr River.
Mm-hmm.
was up, and that was tough to get there. But, you know, this is...
Costler is the, that's 116.
Yeah, see, well, they... I thought it showed, the woman showed you it where we crossed.
Well...
Yeah.
We don't,
Now, there's a picture in there of that, no, you don't want to send it, of that bridge, where they...
Yeah. Okay, well now, that's the one, I'm going to ask you to go over there and sit down, I'm going to ask Martin a few questions.
Okay.
Marge, speaking as an old friend, my kissing cousin. Estelle tells us to, when you were married, let's go back over that, when did you get married?
1933.
Had you known him in high school?
No.
How'd you happen to meet?
We met in swimming down behind the pool farm.
Down on the Sugar Creek?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tell you who was there.
Yeah, tell us who was there.
Purdue basketball player, coach UCLA for so many years.
Oh.
Johnny Wooden.
Oh, Johnny Wooden, okay.
Said it on that Walter Creek, Johnny Wooden when I met him.
Yeah. Oh, Johnny Wooden happened to be there.
Oh, he came down here.
Oh, there's a lot of people there.
Came down quite often.
Uh-huh.
When swimming out there.
Yeah. Now, you were married then in 33. Mm-hmm. That was those were kind of tough times.
They sure were.
Did you have a job?
No.
And when did your first?
Yes, I did have a job. I worked at the Golden Mule.
You worked at the Golden Mule?
Yeah.
That was the, used to be up on the corner of Washington and Maine. Is that the...
Oh, not on the corner. It was next to...
Next to the...
Reasoners.
Next to Reasoners, that's right.
Yeah.
So the bank was on the corner.
Yeah.
And you and me. And when did the kids come along?
Yeah, Sharon was born in 35, and Jay Frank was born in 38. Oh, they were 6 and 9 when he went into the army.
All right. Were you kind of nervous about his number coming up? You remember that?
Yes, and no, he had taken this job in Indianapolis, and we would have been there yet, probably, if... Well, when he found out he was going to be called, he wanted to come back so the children and I would be left in Crawfordsville.
Uh-huh.
So Del Camp was coming over there about every week trying to talk him into coming back. So we just came back.
Yeah. And where were you living at that time?
907 West Main.
That's 907. That's down here near, what street is that? Near Blair, somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay. And did you own your own home or were you renting?
We didn't right then. I bought it while he was still in the Army.
Uh-huh.
That was one of the big things. It was it's a big thing to buy a house with your husband across the sea.
How did you finance it?
War bonds.
War bonds. Did you?
I hated to cash them, but I did.
Uh-huh. And
the things were not that expensive then.
Uh-huh. What kind of a house was it?
Oh, it's a big house. They had 9 rooms.
That would have been on the
south
side of the street. They had 9 rooms.
Uh-huh.
And then when Estelle, his number finally came up, did you have any time there that you get prepared for this?
No. But he had such a good attitude about the whole thing. We didn't have too much trouble.
Uh-huh.
He just wouldn't let me go to the station to see him off.
Uh-huh.
His sister and dad went with him.
Uh-huh.
They let me home.
Yeah. And went to the station. Where'd they go? Down here?
Indianapolis.
Down to the, went to the Big Four then?
Indianapolis.
Yeah, but
yeah.
Go down to the station. Left from that station down where Crawford's Groceries.
No, he left from Indianapolis.
Bus.
Oh, you took a bus over?
Yeah.
Okay. go down to the bus to see him off? No.
He didn't want me there.
Did you have any kind of counseling or anything like that? There were probably other wives who had husbands off in the service.
Dr. Taylor was my mainstay. He was the minister of the Methodist Church.
Dr. Howard Taylor, is that his name? C. Howard Taylor?
Yeah. He was great. And Ted Gronert talked to me quite often. And Herman Wright, when I was working for Cass's Grady Chadwick.
Yeah.
He'd come in the office and sit on my desk and tell me, he said, I don't let people tell you that it's easy and all this. He says, it's tough. Mm-hmm. But he was great.
Yeah.
He was great.
Now, did you, your kids were growing up, or were you working well? Esther was fine.
My mother was living with us at that time. I lost my dad, and she was with us, so I had a good babysitter.
Yeah. What about getting food and that sort of thing for taking care of the household? Did you have an automobile?
Yes.
Were you able to use it much? Any kind of rationing?
Oh, I didn't have any trouble. I didn't go anywhere. I just stayed home. And before he went to the war, Esther always served our dinner. And after he left, Jay Franklin was served. He was only six. We put him on the catalog, and he served the dinner. So it took us all evening to eat.
While Esther was off, how was life here in Crawfordsville? What was it like?
Oh, it was pretty good. We had good neighbors down the street and friends, Bill and Kay Wilson. And they...
Do they live at the same place they live now?
Yeah.
So they were pretty close.
Oh, yes. And my kids would go down there, and Sandy would come down to our house. And every evening we had ball games in our backyard.
Uh-huh.
And I pitched for them. Dave Frank said I lifted up the wrong leg, but I got the ball out. So. But our backyard was just a great thing. And Jay Frank was really too small to mow it much, so I mowed it. So he wanted a cement and paint it green.
did you hear from Estelle often?
Pretty often. And the post office was great. When a letter would come in from him, he'd call. And when he was in the hospital, I didn't hear from him for 6 weeks.
Okay.
And they called me the minute the letter came in.
Yeah. Who was the postmaster at that time?
Probably his former sheriff. Remember?
I remember.
Yeah. But the postmaster would call you when a letter...
Yeah.
What about other wives? Did you keep in touch with them who had husbands off in the service?
Well, yeah.
Can you remember any of those?
No, see, I didn't know which ones were with Esther. See, Marion Cooper was there, and John Frazier, and I was with Ruth an awful lot.
Ruth Frazier? He was a dentist here in Crawfordsville.
Yeah.
Had he been practicing here before the war? I didn't realize that.
What? Didn't he practice here before the war?
No, he bought...
I'm not sure.
I don't think so. I'm trying to think. I don't know. Warren bought him out. I don't remember.
But I think Warren bought him out.
Yeah, Warren did.
Yeah. What about the doctors? Were there some other doctors? Were there doctors from here off in the service?
Dr. Millis. Our family.
Dr. Millis?
Yeah.
And who took Dr. Millis' place as your family doctor? Well, he was gone.
Jess Burks. Yeah, he was great.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't know any of these other wives? You didn't socialize with any of these other wives who had their husbands off?
Well, various ones, but I can't remember.
Can't remember.
That's a long time ago.
I know. Well,
we had a terrible time Christmas time, I remember.
Did you?
Yes.
When?
Jay Frank wanted the baby elephant and Sharon wanted the baby sister.
Oh.
It was a little difficult. But Esther's sister lived here, Aunt Margie. She's back here now. And she'd come down. And that Christmas, we tried to serve all
In your house?
Yeah.
That would have been the Christmas of '44, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But my kids were great, they were just great.
What's, where is Jay Frank now, where?
He's president of Brass Chadwick Rubber Company in Kilbuck, Ohio.
In where?
Kilbuck, Ohio.
Kilbuck, Ohio.
He lives in Millersburg, yeah.
But Sharon is still here.
Sharon's still here.
And, well, you spoke of Ted Grummer, Ted was the, part of the college.
Yeah.
How did you happen to know him?
Well, he got in touch with me when Estill was over there.
Oh.
And he, oh, he was a great help, and whenever we read, or Gabriel Heater would come on, then he'd call me and we'd talk about it. And, Dr. Taylor was just great. When Estill came back, on his 10-day leave, Dr. Taylor talked with him quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, he said, I don't think you need to worry about Estill. He said, he knows what he's doing and what he's going for. He said, I think he'll be all right. His attitude was exceptional.
I take it you've been regular members of the Methodist Church,
oh, yeah.
Methodist Church,
yeah.
Over here.
Sunday school and church.
Oh.
Dr. Taylor.
Yeah. He's been going a good long time.
Yes, good long time, but I'll never forget him.
Yeah, that was Bert Allen's father-in-law.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Any further recollections you got at Crawfordsville at that time in March?
Oh, it was great. Everybody was so nice to us, Dave and Cy Gerard particularly. But we'd go when he was in this camp, Atterbury, they'd bus them up to the baseball games in Indianapolis, and Kate and Bill would take me over, and we'd sit there through the ball game and hold hands, and we'd get on the bus and go back to Atterbury, and I'd come back. I got a little tiresome. We sure were glad to see him home.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about all that we want to cover. We sure do thank both of you for doing this. Before I close here, I want to say a few words about the people that have been working on this. We want to, we're particularly thankful for the what the American Legion has done for the Historical Society and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Claire Chamberlain in particular, and who has coordinated this thing. Ed Miller has been the cameraman on a good many of these things, and of course Mike Paul here of the Historical Society. And so, as Bob Wormley's going to say, we'll close this one out. And sure do, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.